Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
Side if it takes longer to get dressed or just take your stuff off at work to get ready. Gloves, hat, coats.
You had gloves on today.
Yeah, first time you've ever seen me in gloves, huh?
Holy cow.
My mom yelled about it, 45 years ago, so I figured I might as well pay attention now. Good morning, everybody. Hi. Welcome to the program. We'll get to the top six at six in a second. Samber, you have a problem?
I do.
What's the problem?
Catherine, my stepdaughter, gave all of us these things called cabin socks.
Oh, yeah. I have a pair.
Do you? Okay. They're like, for those that don't know, it's like a really thick sock.
Big, thick sock. Keep your feet warm.
And they're really fuzzy and soft on the inside.
Yeah, just the way I like it. Fuzzy and soft.
And the boys in my house, Pat and Patrick, I'll put them on before they were washed. And since I've taken them off, and there's the fuzz that comes out of these cabin socks is like
it's rained down upon your house.
It is everywhere, and because it's dry outside, I can't, like, it's like dry in the house, and so the fuzz doesn't collect or any, like, all we are doing is vacuuming and trying to like hurt
but don't
this
you enjoy
fuzz.
Vacuuming
actually no I don't
what
Pat does the vacuuming in our house.
Good God, I thought I knew you.
I know, I like doing everything else, but I've got fuzz. It's in every load of laundry, every rug in the bathrooms. Like,
that's the worst.
Because Patrick went into the shower last night, and then he came out, and his feet
were
wet.
Why is he wearing his socks in the shower?
I don't know, because he does weird things. He's 10. But
do you really wash socks before you wear them? I know I wash underwear.
I wash everything
you wear.
Typically, I do
new
not.
Socks?
Well, I wouldn't ordinarily, but the cabin socks, I know them to be these fuzz. They generate fuzz.
So we've talked about this before. You need a different house. You can stay married to Pat, but you need a different house.
I never wash
her
anything.
Own house.
No, I never wash anything that. So if I get a
ever?
New well, no, wait.
Oh,
if I get a new shirt, like yeah, I don't know what a t-shirt or a pair of pants, whatever. So I never wash it, but I know someone who washes every single item, even if it's like a brand new, you know, something nice that you have to have dry cleaned. And then
yeah,
wearing it.
I'm kind of on the. Side of
I think if you have the time to do it, it's fine. But
underwear for sure.
Well, yeah.
Mary, remind me if I ever invite you to my house to call a full hazmat before you come over, because my dog sheds, and I think your head would explode if you came to my house.
That's mine would too. One of the many reasons why we don't.
Well,
have
I mean, the audience probably knows something. The audience probably has some help for you.
You know what I've been doing? I've been using the
wrapping your hands in duct tape and crawling around your house.
Basically, I've been using the lint roller, and I've been getting on the
floor. You lint rolled your house.
The fuzz because it's not it's so dry.
No, I lint roll the bathroom.
You lint roll your house?
I lint roll the bathroom tile. Yeah.
Oh wow!
Because
so
when you dry
like your hair,
when I dry my hair, I lose so much hair because we have long
so much
hair.
Easier to be
I'd
a dude.
I'd have to roll in like a thing of you know the how carpet arrives in a big roll. That's how much lint roll I would need for my.
Yeah. That's another thing in my house. I like to pull off the lint, the used
the
lint roll paper, so that it's ready to go new.
Oh, you use the paper. You don't even use like the.
The tape roll thing.
The tape roll.
Yeah, except for somebody in my house.
You know what that is? That's fly paper with a handle.
Yeah.
Somebody pulls it only halfway off and leaves the old one dangling, and I don't really know what that method is.
Dave, the solution is only one.
My method.
What's that?
Become
Sandberg
a guy.
Needs to move.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Move by myself.
Just move out of her house, get a house next door.
I think so.
So you want to know.
Cabin socks have taken over since Christmas. I've been cleaning up fuzz, and I can't. They've since been washed.
And I thought they had problems in the Middle East.
I still have fuzz everywhere, and I cannot seem to get rid of the fuzz.
Yeah, my wife is obsessed with keeping a clean house. I mean, our house is spotless.
That's delightful.
She has never lint rolled the house. I promise you.
Tell her lint rolling the bathroom picks up all.
No, I'm not telling her that, Andrea.
If we had a video we could put up for the listeners of you lint rolling your house, I think it would be quite popular.
All right, I'll see if I can produce something like that.
Okay. All right. Well, listen. Get your head together. We got a show to do. I know you've got a lot of problems at home. Blackhawks goalie Jeff Glass going to be on next hour. He's a pretty good story in what's been a troubled season so far.
Yeah.
But any minute now, they're going to turn it around.
I keep waiting. Tonight would be a good place to start.
It would be a good place to start. What time is game time?
It's a 7 o'clock puck drop tonight at Madison Square Garden.
Against them Rangers.
Yes.
And they beat the Rangers last time they played the Rangers.
They did.
Yeah.
That Rangers have been playing okay, and they won the Winter Classic on New Year's Day.
Right.
And
first time I didn't watch a minute of it.
Same here. I was watching football.
Yeah.
But they did say that it was a little tough this year because of the glare again, which I think they've had before. I think we've seen that in the Winter Classic sometimes, and it does play with.
You
the
know,
it
would have helped if all the players wore cabin socks, and then the fuzz from the socks would have covered the ice.
I think they might do that next year. Yes,
could get stuck inside of the ice.
That's exactly right. Ryan Nobles later. President Trump had 16 tweets yesterday. I don't think I've ever tweeted 16 times in a day.
I have to just go out on a limb and say this was by far
16 tweets.
The North Korean tweet, which I know we're going to talk about.
Yeah,
it's the craziest tweet I've ever seen from him.
Be careful. Be
you know
careful.
What? I'm sorry.
It's a high
How about
bar.
Wait,
not want to challenge
the craziest
him.
One this year.
And How Paul Conrad that? Coming up in a few minutes before 7 o'clock. There is something called a storm cyclone bomb that could hit New York City.
Bombogenesis, they call it, right?
That's the technical term?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A winter blizzard for the Northeast, particularly Boston, with 75 or more mile-an-hour winds. Mm.
This thing is so big, they're going to fly a Hurricane Hunter aircraft into it later today.
Good man. Good Lord. If you're traveling east this weekend, apparently you're not. 6-6 State. Are you going east?
Well, we have a game at Penn State Friday.
That could be interesting.
Maybe. Oh, we're flying tomorrow. So.
You may be flying now.
Maybe.
Yeah, you may have to leave in the next 10 minutes.
Get the rental car.
At 6-16, it's traffic. Welcome back, Mary.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Item number one, the record that we're going to set this weekend may never be broken again. Chicago on the edge of setting a cold snap record. If temperatures don't go above 20 by Saturday, and forecasters say they're not going to, we'll tie a record for 12 consecutive days below 20. The 13th consecutive day looks dicey. It looks like we will get above freezing,
mm-hmm.
But it's not out of the question. We could hit 13 straight days.
How weird is it? It hasn't risen above 20 degrees since Christmas Day. It doesn't seem as though it's been this cold, even though just the past few days.
I walked in today. It's 12 degrees. It felt great.
It did.
Uh-huh. It was 12 degrees is a huge win right now. Okay, next. Illinois was the most moved out of state in 2017. What does that mean? It means what I said. More people moved out of Illinois last year than any other state. According to a study by United Van Lines, 63% of the moves in Illinois were outbound. Number two is Jersey. Number three, New York. Number four, Connecticut. Number five, Kansas, followed by Massachusetts, Ohio, Kentucky, Utah, and Wisconsin. Number one of people leaving the state.
Yeah, how about that?
And it's interesting to note that none of the border states to Illinois made the top 10 other than Wisconsin. Uh-huh. So, therefore, you can safely assume that it's us. It's not a Midwest thing.
I would think so. Do you know what the number one moving into state is?
No.
Vermont.
Really?
Yeah. Vermont, Oregon, Idaho.
Really?
Yeah.
Idaho?
Yeah. Vermont, Oregon, Idaho, Nevada.
It's got to be like on a percentage basis, right?
And South Dakota, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I'm serious.
Next. A federal judge has ordered the city of Chicago to pay nearly $5.6 million in legal fees on top of a $22 million award in damages to a former El Rucan gang member who alleges that two Chicago police detectives framed him for a 1984 double murder that sent him to death row. The more we see about these payoffs and these settlements in court, the more you realize that this small minority of bad apples in the police department have cost the city and the county millions. Well, now we're into hundreds of millions of dollars.
It's ridiculous. The law, I think, my opinion, the law needs to change for how these payoffs are awarded. Because right now, all it needs is city council approval, and they have never not approved one of these multi-million dollar settlements.
Well, wouldn't this be a trial lawyer's thing? And if it's a trial lawyer's thing, wouldn't it be a Mike Madigan thing?
Oh, there you go.
Well, it all comes full circle.
Look at the
irony.
It?
And by the way, if I'm wrong about that, Mr. Madigan should call and let me know. This is the 1,059th consecutive show that Mike Madigan has not appeared on. And by the way, Mr. Madigan, you can reach me on Twitter at Cochran Show and on Facebook, Steve Cochran Show. Next, Orrin Hatch, senator from Utah for 7 terms. That's 42 years. 7 terms. The Senate's longest serving Republican has announced he'll retire at the end of the year. President President Trump allegedly begged him to stay because he's been a big Trump supporter and got actually emotional after the tax bill success. I use success in quotes. Well, the people of Utah, including our own hometown Salt Lake City, Utah paper in an op-ed said, essentially, I think the words you could use were get out.
Mm-hmm.
Your time has come.
Bye-bye.
The number one possibility of becoming the next senator from Utah is a guy you may know, Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
Mitt Romney changed one of his social media addresses from Massachusetts to Utah yesterday to sync up with other Utah addresses. He's a very wealthy guy, you may remember. He has houses all over the place, but has had a long-time residence in Utah and is planning on spending more time in Utah and is expected to run. We'll see. Next. We're going to do more of this later, but for now, just know that President Trump tweeted a warning to Kim Jong-un. My nuclear button is much bigger and more powerful than yours, and my button works. Let me just repeat that. The President of the United States said, my button's bigger than yours, and mine works.
Mm-hmm. And more powerful.
Next. The Blackhawks are the best-dressed team of all time, according to a poll conducted by NHL.com. From 1959 to present, they come out on top of more than 6 million votes that were cast in a poll conducted by the league's website from the end of November to the end of December. Is there any question about that finding?
No.
Of course not.
Nope. No.
Are we talking about their uniforms on the field or on the ice?
Yes.
Yes.
But both, probably.
Yes. Yeah. And today is Bobby Hull's 79th birthday.
Yay.
And Bobby Hull was one of those guys from the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, wearing the Indian head. The greatest sports logo of all time.
Yeah.
Go Hawks. It's 6:24. That is your top 6 at 6. And it is sponsored by American Weathermakers. American Weathermakers, the heating and cooling 60-minute men. And we thank you for your support. Back after this.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
A snow cyclone bomb headed for the East Coast. We're going to ask weather expert Paul Conrad about that coming up. You know, sure, he's a goofball, but he's a certified meteorologist. He can bring you the science. A couple of texters in regards to the start of the show today weighing in. And among them, this. Andrea, always wash your new clothes. My son worked at a clothing store.
Yeah?
And after putting out the new clothes, his hands would be black.
Wow. Okay. But will that... Oh, I guess not. I always have this fear that it'll shrink, you know, immediately if you put it, wash it, and then put it in the dryer.
I guess you have to hang up everything.
Yeah.
From the 312, I have no help for Sandberg, but I can empathize. I just got one of those nice fluffy sweatshirts. I took it off, and there's fuzzies all over the place. It's crazy.
One giant lint brush.
Lint brush. That could be a new, as seen on TV, product. Mm-hmm. A giant lint brush on a broom.
Yeah.
They need to make them bigger. They're
too small. Do they not do that already? A giant broom lint brush?
They have a Swiffer. Swiffer.
Yeah, that picks up a lot.
Is that what a Swiffer does?
Dog hair and fuzz balls.
Look at this. Courtney Hall gave this to me from TV.
You're holding up a lint brush.
Yeah, I'm holding up a lint brush, and I had the Dow from my the down from my coat. Look at how tiny this is.
Small. It's very small.
So, like you said, if they made giant lint brushes, that'd be fantastic.
Very small. Giant lint brush on a broom handle. Somebody go do that. And, you know, I feel like we could use some good news because there's so much. I mean, 2017. Well, good God. Thank God it's over. And we could use some good news. And in nearby Walnut, Illinois, I think we got one of those stories. The Clausens had a horrible nightmare. September 19th, their six-year-old son, Caleb, riding an electric scooter, doesn't quite know how it works. He's six. Loses control of it. It zooms out onto the road in front of the house, and a tanker truck hits the young man, the young boy, the little guy. Hit him. Truck runs him over. Freak accident leaves the Walnut, Illinois boy with multiple critical injuries, a fractured skull, two broken femurs, a broken pelvis. He was placed in a medically induced coma for 3 weeks, required 11 surgeries to put him back together. That's just to repair the injuries. Caleb's parents say the doctors were not optimistic. Here's the quote. We were told by a neurologist and another doctor that Caleb's never going to eat on his own again. He'll never breathe on his own again, and he'll be stuck in a vegetative state for the rest of his life. Guess what Caleb did the other day?
Did he wake up?
Well, he wake up. He's home, and he's about to ride a bike.
No.
With the help of the Clausen Family's community in Walnut, which has raised money, and we'll give you some ways you can help with that if you like, and a loving family and three other kids, Caleb has continued his healing journey. And 3 months after the accident, he rode a bike and walked again for the very first time.
Oh, my God. That's wonderful.
Great news.
Quote again, we were told by an educator at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab. We run some commercials for them, don't we?
Yes.
I think we do. That the family has every reason to believe we're going to be getting our old son back.
Wow.
He's our miracle child.
That is great. That community, friends of mine have a farm in Walnut.
Uh-huh.
It's a wonderful community.
Don't doubt
Look how they rallied.
We will post that piece because there's a video as well. It'll make you cry when you watch it, but make you happy too. If you go to youcaring.com, if you're so inclined, and just search Caleb Clausen, C-A-L-A-B, Clausen, C-L-A-U-S-E-N, you will be able to help at that YouCaring site. They also have a Facebook page called Prayers for Caleb. But how about that? You know, there's so many stories, right, where you hear, well, this person's in a vegetative state. Do we need to, you know, just let them go? Oh, miracles happen. And this little guy, how tough is that little guy?
How cool is that?
Right?
He's going to ride. Not only is he awake and walking, he's going to ride a bike.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, really a miraculous story.
It's awesome.
You guys, do you remember my niece got hit by a truck?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She's fine.
Yeah.
She's completely fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing close to the nightmare that these folks went through, but still.
Boy.
You just can't imagine anything worse.
Mm.
I remember seeing my cousin get hit by a car, about the same age, about 6 years old. And we're just goofing around, and he rode his bike out onto this road, and we lived out in the country, right? So car going by was big news. But he rode his bike out on the road, and he got hit, and this woman was devastated. You know, a six-year-old kid. And he broke his leg. But, you know, little kids. I mean, it was almost like his leg healed on the road. Mm-hmm. It's like he got up and started playing again.
Right.
But it's a nightmare. It's just one of those things you go, oh, I got to. This, to some extent, Dave, is why our generation of parents and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be called a helicopter parent because you're worried that your kid's going to get hit by a car. But it's one of the reasons that we now forbid children to play outside.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because we know what can happen.
Right. If you go outside, there's a chance something terrible might happen.
I mean, do you remember when you could play in construction sites?
Oh
sure.
Sure. You know, now you can't get near them.
I was running, and yeah, because I used to do that, and jumped over a board with a nail in it, right in the bottom of my foot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Goofing around.
Sure. Everybody did that.
I caught my leg playing running bases because there were guide wires on the trees.
Wait, in the 80s?
Yeah, in the 80s. And we played in a
few. That's surprising because the 80s was the beginning of you can't go outside.
I know. Well, we could go outside until the streetlights came on. Or my mom would always say, don't come unless, you know, you're hurt or there's blood.
Right.
So we were doing cartwheels on the driveway one time.
Right.
I cut my chin.
Oh, that's how you learn.
Came running in and she said, oh, my God, there's blood.
Right. Right. So, well, you said that was the rule.
Right.
If I'm bleeding, I get to come inside.
So I was okay to come inside.
Until you cut your leg on a rusty fence, you really haven't lived.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's true. And, you know, I've long advocated for invisible fencing for children. But we can't figure out a way for the kids to get the shock without seeming mean.
Right.
Works for the dogs.
It does.
So it's 6:44. We'll get to traffic here in just a second, and then Paul Conrad will try to explain this nightmare storm that's coming to the East Coast, particularly the Boston area. If you've ever flown into Boston and into Logan Airport in particular, it looks like you're landing in the ocean.
It does.
Until their wheels touch down. Uh-huh. The city is literally right on the water, and that's why they get these nor'easters and these incredible snowstorms. But we're bringing it up here, not just because we're here and not there, but because a lot of you travel. And if you're traveling east, like Dave is this weekend, you may have to make some alternative plans or at least be aware to watch it. Back on 720 WGN, this is the love theme from Paul Conrad that you hear whenever Paul's on. The buttons in here have been relabeled. Oh, no, there it is. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Hello, my love. I'm great, thank you.
I literally couldn't find your button.
Yeah, we've had a problem with that over the years.
A lot of people having problems with buttons this week.
Yeah, that's right. Buttons on your desk, bigger buttons, smaller buttons.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you know, listen, you're a very entertaining guy. We've established that.
Thank you.
I think it's always entertaining when you're on the show. But you're also a trained weather expert.
Yes.
Yeah, meteorologist.
Yeah.
You got the stamp.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have never heard the term I heard last night for this storm that's headed east, this weather cyclone bomb. I mean, this sounds like something that Tom Skilling
said. Where did you hear
this? This is last night on either CNN or MSNBC. Yeah. Or
this is the stuff I hate. Weather cyclone bomb.
So it's not a real weather
term. What a bunch of morons.
Is it malarkey?
This is the worst of what the media does, right?
Like well,
hyping and labeling. Hold on one second. Have you ever heard of a weather cyclone bomb? No, she just laughed. And
who is she?
This is Morgan Kolkmeyer sitting right next to
me. Oh, hi, Morgan. How are you?
She's great. But no, I've never heard of such a thing. But it's typical. It wouldn't surprise me for CNN or MSN, any of those morons to...
So there is no weather cyclone bomb. Wait, stand by one second. Yep. We got a traffic update. What's going on there?
Everything was blocked on the inbound Kennedy at Ogden with an accident. Car was facing the wrong way. They've just cleared the car away, and all lanes have been reopened at Ogden on the inbound Kennedy.
I bet it's because they found out there was no weather cyclone bomb.
Yeah.
That's probably why they cleaned it up so quickly. All right, so
we'll be all right, though, I believe.
So what about the 75-mile-an-hour winds during a blizzard?
Yeah. That's a blizzard. That's a blizzard.
That
qualifies as a blizzard.
That's just a blizzard?
Yeah, it's a big blizzard, but it's a blizzard, yeah.
Okay, so that's not a cyclone bomb?
I wouldn't call it a cyclone bomb. I don't know who's... You go through the National Weather Service glossary, look for bomb. I'm pretty sure you're not going to find anything.
Okay, I was not aware.
Yeah.
And you're telling me that Morgan and you...
Yeah.
We've both gone through the weather training. Yep. You both are stamped
and
approved.
And I've got a seal of approval from the American Dance Academy also.
Right. And neither one of you have heard weather cyclone bomb.
No.
Okay.
You want me to check with McGill? He's the smartest of all.
Is he around?
Yeah, hold on.
Okay.
Let me just yell across the room.
Okay.
McGill! Have you ever heard of a weather cyclone bomb?
Yes, I have.
Oh.
Whoa! Wait,
he
says he has.
He hold on.
But it's not the drink.
All right, so I'm looking at it right now. It's from Fox News and the Washington Post. And by the way, those two don't normally get mentioned together. The bomb cyclone to slam the East Coast as a winter storm continues.
Bomb cyclone. Hey, McGill, jump on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, how are you, man?
Hey, good, good. I think technically it has to drop by 1 millibar an hour for 24 hours of central pressure of the storm to be considered a bombos.
A bombos?
Bombogenesis. Storm.
Bombogenesis.
A bombogenesis.
That's super interesting.
How about that?
A 1 millibar
an hour for 24 hours. So a very deepening, very quickly intensifying storm. Deepens very quickly.
So how is this worse than 75 mile an hour winds in a snowstorm? I mean, that's bad enough. Or is that literally the definition of what we're talking about?
It's not worse, but they will have blizzard conditions in New England, though, with this storm system. I don't think they'll have 75 mile per hour winds, but they'll have pretty strong winds.
Well, the bomb cyclone's back on.
Well, yeah. I'm an idiot.
Well, so is Morgan.
A bomb...
bomb cyclone.
Bombogenesis.
Oh, yeah.
Bombogenesis.
Mambo Bombo.
A little bit of snow in
the east.
That
was a Lou Vega song. Bombogenesis. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate that.
Yeah, see, this is why you got a staff here.
Yeah, because everybody together can come together with it.
Right. And whoever can get on the internet fastest also helps.
But how excited are you now that you're going to be able to use the term bomb cyclone on Channel 9
this morning? Yeah, I got to write that down. Bomblogenesis.
Bomblogenesis, bomb cyclone.
Number
Work that
six.
Into your next forecast.
And millibar. I like that, too.
And now your millibar's dropping.
That's old school.
One millibar an hour. Let's go live to Dave in Boston. What do you have, Dave?
Right now, the bombogenesis has not yet arrived. All Steve, right. Back to you.
All right, so there you go. It's Dave live at Logan Airport.
Dave's
going to
be, you're going to be right in the middle of the bombogenesis.
No, I'm not going to be right in the middle
if
of it. I'm going
to
be
Penn
west
State?
Of that.
You're going to be where?
And State College.
State College, Pennsylvania. They're not even getting a little bombogenesis.
No, thankfully.
All right, so there you go. It turns out we helped you with the weather.
You are welcome.
What?
That's my friend Paul Conrad. All right, go back to
all work. My love.
All right, take care.
May I just say one thing? When you first brought this up this morning, where was the term? Who first said the term bombogenesis on this show this morning?
Was you?
That was me.
Oh,
remember?
I didn't know that.
Like last half hour. Go back,
what?
Check the tape.
You mentioned bombogenesis?
Either.
Yes.
Why did you mention
bombogenesis?
You
said bombogenesis.
When you brought up this storm bomb or whatever you called it, I said, you mean the bombogenesis?
I did not hear that.
Okay, I didn't hear that either.
I regret that I did not give you credit earlier.
No one's looking in the booth.
No one's even looking.
You know what? I bet you didn't. I'm going to go back and listen.
Here's a story from the Washington Post. Unforgiving cold. Oh, when the crickets go, you know, now you've triggered people to call into the Mike Madigan game. I wish Mike Madigan were in Boston this weekend. Unforgiving cold has punished the eastern third of the United States for the past 10 days, so says the Washington Post. A monster storm will hammer coastal regions from Georgia to Maine. And by Thursday, exploding storm will in many ways resemble a winter hurricane, battering easternmost New England with potential damaging winds, in addition to blinding snow. Forecasters are expecting the storm to become a bomb cyclone. What is that called, Dave, again? I forget.
It's a bombogenesis.
The snow is predicted to fall so fast, an indicator of explosive strengthening, that storm could rank as the most intense over the waters of eastern New England in decades at this time of the year. Blizzard conditions could paste some coastal areas. Most extreme conditions will remain well out over the ocean. Well, the thing is, this will affect travel at O'Hare.
Oh, big time.
Because, any of the major airports that get stopped, the backups end up dominoing to the other major airports.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Midway has a lot of flights out to Boston.
Could it start a Sharknado?
I don't know. The responsible storm is forecast to begin taking shape off the coast of Florida today. Hazardous snow and ice in highly unusual conditions exist from Lake City, Florida, to the northeast. Mm. It then expects to rapidly intensify, buffeting the mid-Atlantic beaches in eastern New England. Well, it's a bad day to be at the beach. Mm. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Don't tell Chris Christie.
It's January.
I was going to lay out at North Avenue Beach today. It looks like I got to change that plan.
Bring your ice shoes.
The National Ice Sneakers?
Yeah, ice sneakers.
Snow sneakers? Yeah, that's it. The National Weather Service serving Florida and southeast Georgia cautions that a nasty mix of light freezing rain, light sleet, and light snow is expected to develop Wednesday with significant icing possible. There is a chance of freezing rain and sleet at Disney World today.
Mm. Can't even imagine.
Minnie, bring me a hat. In Charleston, South Carolina, one of the country's great cities, used to live there, 1 to 3 inches of snow and sleet is forecast today. And I can tell you, anywhere in the southeast, we know this in Atlanta because CNN is there, so you see pictures all the time. You get a dusting of snow, you're shut down. The city is completely crippled.
Totally.
I mean, you know what Atlanta has? One plow and a guy named Herb that can drive it.
Some sandbags.
The story continues from Norfolk to Maryland to the Delaware beaches, including much of the southern half of the Delmarva Peninsula. Let's go live to Dave at the Delmarva Peninsula. Are you seeing anything yet, Dave?
Not yet. Standing here near Lewis, Delaware, right there.
I can tell by the in the background, I Heart Delaware, the sign on the back of
that's
that car.
Right.
Boy, you travel fast.
Yes, he does. Yes. This bad middle to North Atlantic storm will intensify from Wednesday evening to Thursday afternoon and farther inland, the mid-Atlantic, near Interstate 95. Now we're getting near your territory.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where you got to go when you got to go to Penn State.
No, Penn State's west of there.
So. Yeah, but 95, you're getting closer.
It's closer.
You're not that far from 95 in College
Station. I'm not going to a bombogenesis. I just want you to know.
Current computer models suggest most, if not all, snowfall will occur east of Washington and Baltimore. Whew, so far. on Wednesday night into early Thursday, but small shifts to the west could bring dramatic changes to those cities.
This is really all about making my life miserable, isn't it?
Just giving you a heads up, man. To the north, Philadelphia, New York have a better chance for a coating of snow unless the storm edge is closer to the coast, and then they're going to get slammed as well. Atlantic City will be a mess, even bigger than it is now. By the time the storm reaches the ocean waters east of Long Island, New England on Thursday, it will be explosively intensifying into something I like to call a bombogenesis.
Yeah. You know, a quick Google search, there is actually a Wikipedia page for bombogenesis. So it is a term.
This is
legit.
This is a teaching moment for all of us.
Yeah.
So, look, Morgan and Paul, they learned it from Tim.
Right.
You know, the collective work of the Channel 9 Weather Center.
Uh-huh.
And Dave.
Must be.
They try to teach us.
Some listener must have heard me say it in the 6 o'clock half hour.
You know, possibly. I suppose if I check the text lines, the texters are very active in getting credit and taking credit and also assigning blame.
It's funny, though. I didn't hear it. Steve didn't hear it. Jake didn't hear it.
Well, there's an extended text here in the 815. Dave, do you know if bombogenesis will be picked by the Bears in the first round?
Hey, we need him.
That would be a great name for a player.
Bombogenesis. Strong quarterback possibility.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
For those of you considering a quick trip to Moscow, you know, it's been mentioned quite a bit, Russia. I don't know if you noticed in the last two years. Be careful. We're talking about traveling. Here's some ways you can get arrested in Moscow. You can't drink in public places. There's a stereotype that in Moscow, you drink everywhere. The Russian government has made several attempts trying to reduce drunks. There's strict regulations on the sale times for alcohol and restrictions on where you can drink it. Public places are generally off limits to alcohol. Dave, will this keep you from going?
No, it's not even an issue.
So you will go to Russia. Are you a spy?
No, I have no plans to go.
Sounds like spy talk to me.
I'm heading to the bombogenesis.
The ingenuity of sounds like a nightclub when you put it that way. The ingenuity of the Russian people has, of course, led to elaborate ways of consuming alcohol, but there is always a chance of being caught and worth taking a precaution or two. Drinking in the park is apparently a big deal in Moscow, where others would be the lookouts.
Really?
Yeah, like you'd be drinking, uh-huh, and I'd be standing there watching for the authorities to come by.
So I would just be chugging, and you'd be looking for the
lookouts. Yeah, and then I'd drink, and you'd watch for me.
That's weird.
Also, always carry your papers.
Like your passport?
Yeah, have you been to Moscow?
No, I've not been to Russia.
Always carry your papers. You must have your ID for random ID checks, usually in crowded places, subways, public squares. The police are looking for migrant workers without the proper permission to work. Without having the proper form of ID means you're going to be taken to the police station immediately.
Wow.
Do not play Pokemon Go.
Is that still a thing?
A fairly innocent activity? Not in Moscow. In Russia, a player used the game to make a statement and raise awareness of the growing influence of the church in Russia. He recorded himself playing Pokemon Go inside a church while chanting religious-sounding incarnations. His actions fell under the law of insulting religious feelings. Signed by Vladimir Putin during, remember that band called Pussy Riot?
Yes.
Those three girls that got arrested?
Yes.
So you can play Pokemon Go. This is an extension of that, actually. Just don't do it as a way of getting yourself in trouble. Don't write a letter to the government.
Really?
Yeah. Representative of the Open Russia movement was detained for collecting open letters to Putin from citizens in Russia. The letters were requesting that the current president not run for another term. The people were arrested.
Oh, no.
Don't smoke in public places. What do you think? That'd be another Russian stereotype, that they'd all be smoking and drinking vodka?
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Battling smoking has been a recent aim of the government. And to be frank, their efforts have been successful. Smoking now prohibited inside restaurants, bars, and nightclubs. The most determined smokers huddle outside in the Russian winter to get their fill of nicotine. But lawmakers have gone further now, forbidding smoking in the vicinity of many public places. They may be ahead of us on this curve. Because what's more frustrating in the wintertime? Well, really, any time. than, like, say, a restaurant that has their smoking employees go outside to smoke, and they're standing by the entrance that you're walking through.
And that's many buildings, too. It's like a kind of a smoking wind tunnel that you go through if you don't smoke.
Right. Don't bribe or take bribes. Corruption's still a major issue in Russia. I think unless you're Putin or some of his people, don't bribe or take bribes. Don't paint Easter eggs.
Really?
Yeah. Don't meddle with anything religious unless you know exactly what the rules are for that said religion, and that said religion has been approved by the Putin government.
What's the deal with not painting Easter eggs?
A group of Maltsev activists decided to show their support. I don't know what a Maltsev activist is. Sounds like another drink. By writing free Maltsev on Easter eggs. They're using the Easter eggs as a protest.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Be careful where you protest, peaceful or not. Any form of public outcry is immediately responded to by police action. They may not round you up and take you away, but don't assume you have a constitutional right, as you do here, to assemble and protest.
See, hence the Girls and Pussy Riot who went to jail.
Exactly. Coming out as gay. Russia eradicated the direct law against homosexuality in the 90s, but the stigma has remained. And 2013 brought about an anti-gay propaganda law. So if you, like, there is no gay pride parade.
Mm-hmm. No, I guess not.
Yeah.
Not in St. Petersburg Square.
Be careful when you post on social media. Fight against internet extremism, very real in Russia. Posting or reposting material falls under the law against public calls for extremism. So, you know, your Facebook page is being watched constantly.
Boy. Apparently Twitter, too.
And don't drive without a license.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk. Sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
.720 He's a good story. And he's a fine goalie. Got his big NHL break the other day. He's Jeff Glass as the Hawks head for Madison Square Garden to play the Rangers tonight. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Doing fine. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. It's been quite the ride so far. It's been a good run. Looking forward to tonight.
What's the difference between the first time you put the pads on and the first time you put the pads on and then the Indian head logo?
Well, it's pretty special. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys how cool it is to wear that jersey and what it means to me and to everybody in that locker room. I've heard how special this room is and how special this franchise is, and to be a part of it is really cool. So it's something I've looked forward to my whole life, and obviously you got to live that out this week. So it's been a pretty wild ride so far.
Yeah, and you're doing a fine job, and you've earned it. Talk about the places you played. Where did you start in the minors or even the juniors?
Yeah, so I started playing junior for the Kootenay Ice in Canada. I was drafted by the Ottawa Senators way back when, and I played 4 years in the minors for the Binghamton Senators. And after that, I decided that I was going to sign a one-year deal in Russia, and I went over to Russia for a year thinking that it would just be kind of a stopgap, something just to kind of tide me over until something else came up in the American League or the NHL, and I could come back and try it again. A one-year contract led me into 7 years of Russia, and next thing you know, I've been over there for a while.
And that was the KHL?
And that's the KHL, yeah. And so, you know, it was great. The hockey was good. It was nothing to complain about, and it was treating me well. So I stayed over there, but, you know, I finally told myself, if I want to do this, if I want to come back, now's the time. And I was really happy with how my game progressed over there. It's a different style of hockey, and so I came back, and I signed a PTO with the Toronto Maple Leafs and ended up with the Marlies, their farm system, and moved from there on to Rockford. And then from Rockford, I signed a deal with the Blackhawks. So, you know, it's a long story. It's
a cool story.
Most. It is kind of cool, but it's different than most, and I'm okay with that.
So you were in Russia where?
Oh, wow, man, I was in a few spots. I think I ended up in actually five different cities over there, everywhere from Moscow to Tolyatti, Novosibirsk in the middle of Siberia, Kazakhstan. So there's a few different...
So vacation hotspots is what you're talking about, basically.
Yeah, exactly. The spots everybody goes for their vacation. Yeah. It was different. It was good. I mean, I learned a lot over there, and I learned a lot on the ice and off the ice, but it was a lot of fun.
Are you fluent in Russian?
I'm not. No, I can get by just a little bit. I know some words. And
do you know any curse words in Russian?
Exactly. That's exactly what I know. I know all the stuff that can get me by, and maybe order me some food at a restaurant.
All right, so off the air, we'll learn the curse words from you.
See, he and Panarin could have had a good conversation.
Yeah, Panarin actually taught us a couple curse words when he was in studio. So maybe we get you in studio, we could compare your notes to Panarin's notes. Did Putin ever come to any of your games?
No, I don't think he did, actually.
Did you ever see him play? Because he's allegedly quite a player.
Yes, I did. I have watched him play hockey. He's those games are always televised. It's pretty cool when he puts the pads on. So I did see that, but I never actually saw him play live.
Has he got any skills? Keep in mind, you don't have to say that now. The KGB is not listening, Jeff. You're safe here.
You never know. I thought he was all right, actually. He's not bad for all things considered.
Yeah, for an older guy, sure.
Sure.
All right, I have to ask you about the business you have with your wife, but I want to get Dave in here for some legitimate hockey as well. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I want to ask you, because, Jeff, you're going to be playing tonight in Madison Square Garden. Now, that's a far cry from the middle of Siberia. How do you prepare yourself for a game in this kind of a venue? I mean, you played Edmonton the other night. You played in Calgary, which I know was special for you. But now going into New York, Madison Square Garden, a huge game for both of these teams. How do you prepare yourself for that?
Well, you just take it like one, just another game. And I know that sounds so cliche, but I've really been lucky. I put myself in a situation here where I'm a little bit different rookie. I know it's my first game in Madison Square Garden, but I am 32 years old. I've played a lot of hockey in my life. I've played in a lot of different scenarios, different situations. Obviously, none of them Madison Square Garden with this on the line. But I really feel like all the hockey I've played up to this point has really prepared me for this moment and prepared me for this chance. And I'm excited about it. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm welcoming the opportunity. I'm excited. I don't think that it's a situation where I'm going to limp into there. I'm excited. I want to go out there and show what I can do and help this team get 2 points.
I'm sure this is something as a kid you would have dreamed about, the chance to play in the National Hockey League. Were there ever times, whether when you were in Russia or with the Marlies even last year, did you ever lose hope that this day was going to come for you?
Well, you know, Dave, I think sometimes it's hard. It's tough when you're working and you're trying to make a name for yourself, or you're trying to just help the team out, I think, generally speaking, and things aren't going your way, but that's hockey, and I've learned that it's a grind, and sometimes seasons can drag, but if you stick with it and believe in the process and believe in what you're doing and the people around you, your support group, it worked for me, and it got me to where I am here, and I actually did believe that I could get here. It was going to take time, and it was going to be a matter of sticking with it, and it worked for me.
That's a great lesson.
Yeah, it is, and it's a great story, and I love your attitude. Now, you get a great showcase here, but the fact of the matter is you'd rather stay in the game than head back to Rockford. And realistically, you may be in a different sweater next year, but I assume you'd like to play a few more years.
Yeah, no, my goal is to keep playing here. I've put myself in great shape. I changed the way I eat last summer. I changed a little bit of the ways I worked out the last couple summers, and I put my body into a good position where I feel like I could play for quite a few more years. I know goalies tend to last a lot longer than players do. So by no means do I think this is the end of my career. I feel like I'm just getting started. And I'm trying to put myself in a position to allow that to happen.
Let's talk about your business for a second. You and your wife own a yoga studio?
That's right, yeah. No, I have to go a quick plug for the Sweat Lab, it's called. It's a spin yoga and bar studio in Calgary, Alberta. And we're actually opening a second space in Vancouver. So it's been a lot of fun for us. It's been something we started when I was playing overseas, because an actual former hockey player, Matt Kench, he wanted to start it with us, and something he was looking to do once he retired from hockey. And I told him that we couldn't commit as much time to it because I was still playing, and obviously the two of us would be in Russia, but my wife stays real busy with it. It's something fun we enjoy doing.
Jeff, can anybody take a class at your yoga studio, even if someone is perhaps maybe not as bendable as they should be? Or
you're looking at me
stretchy?
When you say that?
No, I meant me.
Yeah, no, it's we're all types there. It's good. It's actually it's a really cool environment. It's a pretty cool atmosphere. We've really tried to develop a community up. We're kind of maybe more of a residential area space there. And we encourage everybody to come out. That's kind of our attitude.
Well, and I would think, you know, the winter being as long as it is in Calgary, it's probably a pretty good business.
Yeah, no, it's been good. It's been a lot of fun. And It's fun to get everybody out, and like I said, it's more the community events that come with it that are pretty cool to see everybody come together for one event or one cause or nice. Whatever it is we're trying to do. So it's been a lot of fun.
I do Downward Older Dog, you know, because, you know, I could do Downward Dog, but it takes a little longer, you know, and I might make it some
roll over.
Yes, roll over and rub my belly. That's another yoga move that's rarely seen by many.
Well, Steve, we got to get you up to Canada. We'll get you to Calgary. We'll get you in, and we'll show you some of the Sweat Labs Downward Dog.
Flexibility, man.
Yeah.
Jeff, you mentioned that you changed the way you work out. Was incorporating yoga part of that change? Is this something you're somewhat new to?
Yeah, it actually was a large part of what I did this summer was just working on pliability, bendability, flexibility, all these fun, trendy words that they're using right
butterfly
now.
Butterfly saves.
That's what I'm thinking.
The fact
that
a grown man can stretch like
sense.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, no, you want to bend, not break when you go down. So there, I think staying in the game is just as important as playing well. So going out there and being able to play every night. And I know, again, it's kind of cliche, but coming back to the fact that I was ready for this moment, and I want to be able to go in there and play now and play to my capabilities, and being able to do that is staying healthy and being able to play for the team.
And years from now, when the career is over, maybe a second career is a Calgary Rockette. I mean, imagine how high you can kick.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have kids?
We do. We just had a daughter, a 2-month-old daughter, Lucy.
Oh, so God bless. Also,
yeah, we're it's life's exciting for us right now.
Oh, that's tremendous. And congratulations as well to John Steinmiller. John Steinmiller helps take care of the players and make sure the players get media opportunities in various places. Good guy, and he and his wife just had their first baby. Very nice.
Yeah, congratulations to them.
All right, we got a question here on the MB of Financial Bank. MB means Business Breakfast of the Blackhawk. This comes from Brooks Bennett. He's 7, but he wants you to know his mom's making him ask the question. Here's the question. How old were you when you first tied your own laces and got yourself dressed?
Oof, good question. I'm going to say I started playing hockey when I was 5. I definitely didn't tie my skates for the first year, maybe 2. So I think he's right about the same age I was. I'm going to say 7 years old.
That's probably not great news for Brooks. He was looking for mom to take it for a little while longer. But, yeah, it sounds like the number. It is.
I think 7. I think at 7 you're going to start to have to carry your own bag, tie your own skates, those sorts of things. It becomes real hockey all of a sudden.
Well, Jeff, it's great. It's great meeting you, and I hope you're in the Indian head sweater for a long time. By the way, best dressed hockey team ever, according to the National Hockey League and NHL.com.
Pretty cool stuff. It's a special jersey to wear for more than one reason, and I'm very proud to put it on.
Have fun in the garden tonight.
Okay, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Safe travels. There you go. What a good guy, huh?
Yeah, how can you not root for a guy like that?
Absolutely. 32-year-old rookie. Now, here's the deal. Crawford comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a 26-year-old that currently backs him up.
Mm-hmm.
But if Glass is good, maybe you make the decision harder, right?
Sure.
You never
Why
know.
Not?
You never know.
Stranger things have happened.
Never know. Hey, we got to remember, have the Hawks been into Philadelphia yet this year? I don't remember the schedule. Point being, you'll remember last year, the Hawks on a Saturday game had to draft a goalie for a day from the local rec league.
They did play there this year. And he was there.
We should have followed up with him.
Yeah.
Gosh darn it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll check it out with him going forward. We'd like to follow up with these guests from the past who make an impact on you. Quick break, back with a big story in a moment. Ryan Noble's coming up from CNN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
What did the president mean when he said the deep state Justice Department? And does this administration believe that the deep state is a real thing, that there is this shadow government out there actively plotting to sabotage him?
Look, the president finds some of those actions very disturbing, and he thinks that we need to make sure if there is an issue that it's looked at. But if there was anything beyond that, I would refer you to the Department of Justice that would look into it.
Does he believe the entire Justice Department and its more than 100,000 employees are part of this deep state?
Obviously, he doesn't believe the entire Justice Department is part of that.
Well, that's a relief. Ryan Nobles is standing by. It's been forever. How are you, Ryan?
Great, Steve. Happy New Year. I hope you had a good holiday. It's great to be back on with you.
Yeah, appreciate
it. 2018.
Yeah, good start to the year. Happy New Year to you. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the deep state? I'm just curious.
I don't think so. I don't know if it's like there's some sort of secret initiation where you have to bow in front of some weird object or something like that in order to gain entrance into the deep state. But maybe by just some sort of, existence, you become part of the deep state. I think perhaps in the president's mind sometimes he can place whoever he wants in or out of the deep state, depending on what they happen to say on any given day.
Well, it seems to me if there was a deep state, it would have a headquarters in the shape of Dr. Evil from the Austin Powers movies, right? And since we haven't been able to see that, I have my doubts. Here's the other thing I'm curious about. The president of the United States appoints Jeff Sessions and also the new head of the FBI, Christopher Wray. Are they in the deep state? Because they're two big cogs in the Justice Department wheel.
Well, it's funny you mention that. And, it's kind of being flipped before about who is in and who's not in the deep state. And I do believe that even people that Donald Trump once considered to be allies, if he's in any way, shape, or form, believes that they are not being loyal to him, which we know loyalty is a very important thing to him, I think that at any given time he could place somebody in the deep state. And Jeff Sessions is a perfect example. This is a guy who really risked his political career in the early days of the Trump campaign by standing next to him and then eventually endorsing him. He was the first sitting member of the United States Senate to do so. Gave up one of the safest seats in the United States Senate in Alabama to become his attorney general. And then basically within the first month of his tenure, got on Donald Trump's bad side. And even late as last week, the president was still criticizing him. So I do think that, and there's many instances where the president feels embattled. And if he is embattled, he is going to lash out. And that means even accusing people that were once his close friends and advisors and labeling them as being part of the problem. And so to answer your question, I do think that there's at least a part of the president that believes that Jeff Sessions is part of this kind of institutionalized government that's preventing him from moving his agenda forward.
I don't know what's more concerning, the fact that he truly believes there is a deep state or the fact that he doesn't believe it, but is using it as some way to protect his own hide in the continuing Russian investigation and create another distraction. Because both of those options are bad.
No, and you're right, Steve. And you know what I think is interesting about this is it's kind of and I would think maybe even the good part of his campaign that he ran on, which is this idea that there is part of Washington that's too entrenched, that there is a level of bureaucracy there that's lost touch with the average American. That's kind of what he ran on to say that he was going to come in. When he talked about draining the swamp, it was what I think resonated with the American people was this idea that there is a level of government that isn't connecting with the average American in a way that serves the people the best they possibly can. But now it's morphed into this like grand conspiracy that, that there's this small group of actors that have run this like entrenched conspiracy to really control the government while the people that get elected have no say. There's no evidence of that. There's no truth to that. And the good part of his message, the message that really resonated with the American people, is completely lost. And any idea of him really truly breaking through and shaking up Washington in a positive way is less and less possible with every given day.
We'll come back with Ryan Nobles more in just a second. Ryan Nobles from CNN. Andre, I want to get Andre involved as well, Ryan, with a question, and we'll tease with this. Does size matter?
Yes.
The Steve Cochran Show.
One of the papers called the other day, and they said, would you speak to the leader of North Korea? I said, absolutely. Why not? Who the hell cares? I'll speak to anybody. Who knows? There's a 10% or a 20% chance that I can talk him out of those damn nukes, because who the hell wants him to have nukes? And there's a chance. But I wouldn't give him a state dinner like we do for China and all these other people that rip us off, or we give them these big state dinners. We give them state dinners like you've never seen. We shouldn't have dinners at all. We should be eating a hamburger on a conference table, and we should make better deals with China and others.
You know, the Democrats don't want to hear they don't have a plan. And don't have a clue how to govern when they take power. The Republicans don't want to hear anything negative about dangerous Donald Trump. We all ought to get together and say we want a solution. We want some answers. So let me get Andre in here. Does size matter? Would you read from the tweet?
The hot button tweet of the day. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the nuclear button is on his desk at all times. Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him that I too have a nuclear button, but it is a much bigger and more powerful one than his? and my button works.
Using your finest journalistic skills, Ryan Nobles, does button size matter?
Strangely enough, it probably does in this case. Although there's been a number of stories this morning about how there actually isn't a button that the president pushes when it comes to nuclear weapons. But I think the symbolism in this particular tweet is enormous, and it has huge implications, and millions of lives are at stake. I mean, essentially, the president is coming right out and saying that he's not afraid, you know, to strike with military options against North Korea, which would seem to be the option of last resort. But we keep going down this road, and every time, you know, we talk about this, we say, well, we'd never really go that far, right? Well, at what point do we start to believe that a military option is indeed on the table and is possible? I mean, at some point, we have to start taking the president's words for real. And I think this tweet this morning, while certainly to a degree tongue-in-cheek and people are joking about it, it has such enormous real-world implications, and it's hard to imagine a scenario that we get out of this without some sort of military action. And I think that's really scary, frankly.
Not that there's any negotiations or even talks going on right now, Ryan, but how will this intensify the tensions between the United States and North Korea?
Well, I think it's huge. And what's interesting is, for all the bluster of Donald Trump, when you actually look at what's happening on the ground there, there are some encouraging signs, which is hard to believe. There's, you know, talks that North and South Korea are actually going to get together and talk. They actually spoke on a dormant line for the first time in a couple of decades, the leader of South Korea and North Korea. And the leader of South Korea seems to have a very cool head when it comes to this whole thing. And he believes that negotiations are the best path forward, and does not want to have kind of a divisive and adversarial relationship with North Korea. But I really believe that this all goes back to a bigger problem that the United States has with its foreign policy, and it's really the proxy war that's happening with North Korea. How much can we trust both China and Russia as it relates to North Korea? And there's an argument to be made that a destabilized North Korea benefits both of those countries. You know, there were reports when I was in Florida covering the president while I was at Mar-a-Lago that both China and Russia are secretly and covertly supplying oil to North Korea outside UN sanctions. So can we believe the leaders of those two countries that they truly want to quell this problem, or are they continuing to support the destabilization? And as dangerous as the showdown is between Trump and Kim Jong-un, once you get China and Russia involved in it, I think it's a much bigger, bigger problem.
No doubt about it. Now, these Panamanian ships supposedly carrying oil from China that continue to be captured by the South Korean naval operations folks, they have not been answered specifically by China, right?
Right. No, both the Chinese and Russian governments have pushed off any kind of blame for this, saying that they've got nothing to do with it. But where is it coming from? There's only a few places in the world that have the ability to provide those resources to North Korea. We know we're not the ones providing it to them. You know what other?
Well, we also know Panamanian flag. We also know Panamanian flag ships with 95% Chinese crews. There's a little bit of a problem there.
Right, and there's no way that that happens without some sort of blind eye being turned by the Chinese government, right? So maybe it's not Xi himself who's ordering this to happen, but they are certainly allowing it to happen on some level. And if you're allowing it to happen on some level, you're continuing to give the North Korean government that faint bit of blood to continue to pump through their veins so they can continue this rhetoric. And that's why I see you have to extrapolate this out a little bit. You can't just think of it as just Trump versus Kim Jong-un. If we got into a war with North Korea, I'm sure millions of lives would be lost, particularly in South Korea, but you would imagine that our military might would end that war very quickly. It's a much different calculation if China and Russia pick sides and those sides aren't our side, which I think is a distinct possibility if this whole thing starts to really come apart at the seams.
So there's a lot of conversation this morning that with that hotline from North Korea to South Korea open again, that we ought to just shut up and stay out of the way. But not just Trump, message out of the UN as well, from Nikki Haley, hey, until they denuclearize, we've got nothing to say to them and they've got nothing to say to us. It just seems like there's mixed messages there. Logic would say, let those two sides talk. Let this whole thing calm down. Even if it's just through the Olympics, that buys some extra time. But there's also the argument that says it wasn't until Trump ramped up the rhetoric, one of my least favorite phrases, that that Kim Jong-un didn't step up and appear to be fearful and seem to back down a bit. So which side is getting more play?
I do think there's a good cop, bad cop thing happening here, where you have the Tillerson and Haley wing of the administration that are trying to calm down the tensions and saying, listen, there's a path here, and supporting South Korea in their negotiations. And then you kind of have the president through his Twitter feed talking tough. And I guess it's trying to show Kim Jong-un that on either end, like, listen, we're willing to work with you. We're willing to find a path out of this. But if you don't comply, we're not afraid to drop the hammer. Now, whether or not that is successful and whether or not the president himself is complicit with that or if he's just going off and doing his own thing, I think that's pretty unclear. Because what I think is interesting about that is there would actually be some sort of sense and strategy to the idea that you've got your diplomats working behind the scenes, but your president is talking tough. But the president has gone out of his way to undercut his own diplomats in this regard. When Tillerson has suggested that speaking to Kim Jong-un would be a good idea, the president comes out with a tweet telling him not to waste his time. So that's what makes you wonder if there's really some sort of coordinated effort here or if they're just flying by the seat of their pants. And there's a chance they could fly by the seat of their pants and this could all work out, because I still believe at the end of the day, Kim Jong-un really doesn't want to go to war, because there's no way that that ends up working out for him. But at this point, it still seems like a really kind of bumpy and risky path that we're going down here, and who knows how it's going to turn out.
The senator from South Carolina says that if North Korea goes to the Olympics, we shouldn't. Is that getting any traction?
There hasn't really been a lot of talk about it. You know, Lindsey Graham has said that. I mean, I find it hard to believe that all these athletes and the multi-million-dollar television contract that's connected to it are not going to go to the Olympics if North Korea shows up. And I also don't know diplomatically if that really solves any of our problems. But to answer your question, there doesn't seem to be a lot of momentum behind that. And, you know, for Lindsey Graham, the respect that he has on the Capitol, he is, without a doubt, you know, the hawkish member of the U.S. Senate right now, even perhaps more hawkish than John McCain on certain issues. So he's always going to be the person that's going to kind of throw something out there that's far out in the reaches, with the hope that perhaps they get a little bit down the road of his position. So, I mean, I just think it's a long shot that unless things get really bad between now and then, that you don't see American athletes competing there in the next couple months.
All right, and to be fair, we hope they do, certainly. And just to wrap it up, the condition of John McCain looked pretty grim a couple of weeks ago, and now there's several statements coming out of his office again. Any news there?
I think he's going to be back in the Senate. From everything that we're hearing, you know, our Dana Bash has a source inside his office that said that he's responded well to his treatment, that he, you know, did much better over the Christmas holiday. You know, I mean, I think anybody that's had a family member that's gone through cancer knows you have good days and bad days. He apparently is heading in the right direction, and he's bound and determined to get back to Washington.
Nobody tougher. Nobody tougher. I don't care if he is 80 years old. Ryan, thanks, man. Good to have you back on.
All right, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
See you, Ryan.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me good.
8:12 now, Dean Richards, live at Channel 9. Good morning.
Happy New Year. Oh, wait, that's yesterday.
That
script.
Was yesterday, but why not again? Happy New Year.
How are you today,
Woo!
Steve?
I'm fine. There is a... let's go to Dave on this. Dave, what's the weather term for what's headed for New England?
The bombogenesis.
A little bit of bombo in my life.
I thought Peter Gabriel was great in bombogenesis, didn't you?
He was good. Yeah, he was good. Just go along.
Oh, yeah. Hated
when they broke up.
You confused Andrea. She had that Phil look like Collins. A dog that heard a strange sound.
I had Mambo Number 5 in my head and Genesis and Phil Collins, so now I'm just a complete 80s mess.
Mambo Genesis, big old storm headed for the New England area. Are you traveling this weekend?
I'm traveling the other way this weekend.
Going back to L.A.?
Going back to Los Angeles.
You got a place in L.A. all the time you go to L.A.?
I do not. No, I should. I should.
You should get yourself a place. Maybe a Studio City.
Tribune Company, before it switches hands. Why not buy me a nice place? The new owners will never know.
Why don't you get a studio apartment in Studio City?
Okay.
Yeah. Just saying.
And then go to a radio studio when I need to do broadcast.
Studio stuff. There you go. I think every studio apartment in Studio City has a studio within it.
Has a studio because there's so many actors
That's
there.
Exactly right. What are you doing in L.A. this weekend?
Do you ever live in Los Angeles?
No, but he spent a lot of time there. I haven't been to L.A. probably in 5 years.
Wow.
Oh, I haven't been in about 10, maybe longer.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
More In-N-Out burgers for me.
That's right. As long as we stay out of town. There's a huge remake coming up film-wise, which is crazy. Well, maybe not crazy. But I'm looking most forward to Dean telling us about his top 10 worst movies of the year. Why don't we start the list right now?
My favorite list of the year.
What's number 10?
Number 10 is, do you remember the Halle Berry movie, Kidnap?
Oh, yeah. The kid's in the car.
Yeah.
And they steal the car.
They steal the kid.
And they steal the kid with the kid in the car.
And then Halle Berry spends the next 90 minutes or so screaming and being hysterical. And if that was the reason to get...
I don't know where you are. But I have a special set of skills.
Oh, that's
wrong movie.
That's we're taken.
Okay. That's a difference. It would be great if Halle Berry had gotten together with Liam Neeson.
Yeah,
that would have been fantastic. But this movie is basically, if you want to hear Halle Berry screaming and being hysterical for 90 minutes, this is the movie for you. Unfortunately for me, I needed a little bit more, so I made that my 10th worst movie of 2017.
Number 9. Boy,
wait, does she know this?
Now, listen, Dean was married to Halle Berry.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, they have a whole Garrett Popcorn thing going on.
We got a thing going on.
My point is, this movie has to be bad if you put it on your worst list.
Yeah, it was pretty awful.
All right, number 9.
This is going to be very, very awkward when we, a lot of times we go to a B&B in Saugatuck together.
Sure.
And, it's bound to come up over croissants some morning.
You see a really ugly morning, the weather's kind of bad outside, and she goes, so, what'd you think of my movie?
And Dean's like, it's okay, I brought you the cheesy caramel mix.
She just plays this tape. She gets it, like, pops this into the recorder.
And so, you and your friend Steve and Andrea had a little laugh at my expense.
You want to see me hysterical?
Let you hear me scream right now.
Now, some of you may disagree with some of my choices.
It's number 9.
And you may love some of these movies, and, you know, that's perfectly fine.
Nah, not really.
Just for me, I threw up in my mouth a little bit for each and every one of these movies, including Transformers The Last Night, that director Michael Bay claims is going to be the last one in this franchise. All uninteresting special effects and explosions, ridiculous storyline, even more ridiculous than usual storyline, that transformed. See what I did there with this movie? Transformers transformed it into pure boredom. So I didn't care for that one at all.
All right, number 8.
Number 8 was, I think, the worst animated movie of the year. The Nut Job, Nutty by Nature. And I'm partially picking this movie just because of its stupid title.
I don't remember The Nut Job.
Do you see a lot of animated movies? Who's that creepy guy?
Why Steve Cochran in this theater again, alone?
Mom, who's that man?
What was The Nut Job? Squirrels?
The Nut Job was squirrels and other animals trying to... Yeah, basically like that. Trying to save nature. Save nature.
Mm-hmm. Didn't work out.
This one redefined lowest common denominator. And as I say in this one, this movie is proof positive that even great voice actors will do anything if you can't see their faces and the check's clear.
Yeah, I don't have to shave and I get money.
Yeah,
fantastic.
And you get money. Most people won't even know it's me.
All right, so for you young broadcasters, pay attention. We split this list in the normal spot.
Oh.
The first three are done. The other seven are coming up right after traffic from Mary Vandeveld.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel
your Dean Richards list of the top 10 worst movies of 2017. We are on number 7.
The tension is building, Steve.
As we wick our way to the top.
Number 7 was this movie, 50 Shades Darker. The second in this, supposedly steamy series based on the popular novels.
What's the next one? 50 Shades of I Can't Believe You Bought a Ticket for This?
That was practically the case with this one. Not only a big critical bomb, but box office-wise, virtually nobody went to see this movie. Do they make a Viagra for movie franchises?
They should. Movie Viagra.
Yeah, just to prop it up a little bit.
A little booster.
Excuse the expression. Mm-hmm. At number 6, I chose...
If your movie's 4 hours or longer, see your doctor.
I chose Baywatch in the number 6 spot.
How dare you.
Baywatch.
How dare you.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, starring, he can do no wrong. He did wrong with this one. But I have a rule, Steve. Even though this movie really was pretty much nothing more than oiled up bodies bouncing around in slow motion on big screen, my rule is I need at least one line of intelligent dialogue per movie in order to stay engaged in the whole thing.
That's why Hollywood finds you unreasonable.
Well, they may be right. They may be 1,000% correct. Now, who remembers the movie Assassin's Creed? Show of hands.
No hands have gone up in the studio.
Crickets?
Creed, but crickets? That was the year before. Crickets?
Creed would be a different movie.
Yeah. That would be completely different. Uh-huh. Assassin's Creed starred two-time Oscar nominee Michael Fassbender, Oscar winner Marion Cotillard, and another Oscar winner Jeremy Irons. No one remembers this movie because it came and went in about 2 weeks, but not before wasting 2 hours of my life that I will never be able to retrieve.
And was this another paycheck movie where, these stars should have known it was bad?
Huge. This was, it was, like one of the most awful ever, really.
Right, because what can happen is you can have a decent script and a great cast and a good director. It's hard to make a bad movie when you put all three together. But if you have one of those three pieces, or even two of those three pieces, the third piece can ruin the formula. In this case, all three pieces weren't bad. You know, the cast was good.
The cast has done previously good work.
Right.
I can't believe that anybody would have looked at this script, and who knows what form the script was in when it was given to them to choose to be in this movie.
Crayon?
Possible, that it was chopped to pieces by the time, the whole thing was done.
Dean, does this warrant one of my favorite lines of yours? The only good thing about it was that you knew it had to end.
That's when it was over.
Right. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You knew it had an ending.
I love that Andrea can quote it. My bad reviews.
And Dean applauds when the movie ends and everybody else goes, why is he clapping? Ovation. He must have loved it.
What's Dean standing about?
And he's crying.
Gave it the fifth. That was the fifth worst one of the year.
Four?
Number 4 may be the most aptly titled movie of the year. A Bad Mom's Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Which was not just a bad movie, it was insultingly bad, about bad moms whose bad moms come to visit at the holidays. This was a sequel that should have not been made. It came and went fairly quickly.
They were going to call it 50 Shades of Bad Moms.
They should have. They should just combine all these titles in. Number 3 was the movie called Ghost in the Shell. Show of hands, anyone?
Ghost in the Shell.
Ghost in the Shell. And this is not menu items at...
I missed it. What did I miss?
You missed Scarlett Johansson.
And I like her.
I would explain the storyline to you, but I'm still trying to figure it out after all this time. This was my number 3 worst movie of the year.
What about number 2?
Number 2 was the movie called Fist Fight. And this is the movie where Ice Cube is a teacher and Charlie Day is a teacher, and they get into a disagreement, and the Ice Cube character challenges the Charlie Day character to an old-fashioned playground fist fight.
This is the movie. I remember talking about this on the air. This is because I really like Charlie Day.
Me too.
And this is the movie where I said, the pitch meeting had to go like this. The guy comes in, he goes, here's the movie I want to make. And you got to give him the pitch. The pitch is... It's teachers or a teacher and a principal at a school who have a dispute and they have a fist fight at the end of the day. Scene! How is that a movie? How does that get made?
Wrong in so many ways. Wrong. I just got a call a few minutes ago from a stupid and insulting who said, hey, quit making me look bad.
We got our monikers back.
Wait, are we up to number one?
We're up to the number one spot. We're up to the number one spot. And to me, maybe some of you love this, the worst movie of the year was Chips. Big screen adaptation of the TV show that was co-written, directed, and starred Dax Shepard. I can never look him straight in the eye again. This is the kind of R-rated comedy that gives all other R-rated comedies a bad name. And this genre is becoming increasingly tired, in my opinion.
Yeah, they keep remaking movies.
Yeah.
Well, there's your top ten. Have you got it on your Facebook page?
I will put it on the Facebook page, yes.
Because people are going to want to review it.
Should it be a clue, Dean, when the movie poster says Chip happens?
Yes, Chips, Chip happens.
Yeah.
I should have known when I saw the movie poster that said Chips, and then underneath it said cheap, horrible, idiotic, predictable, and stupid.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh,
right on the poster,
fantastic.
Steve.
All you
had to do was read the poster.
It does seem like that would keep you from going in. I do remember Eric Estrada was really mad he wasn't asked to do anything in the movie.
Yeah.
I wonder if he felt the same after he saw it.
Yeah, I'll bet he's feeling much better about it now.
All right, let me run through a couple other things here. I mentioned remaking movies. They're going to remake Cleopatra?
How about that? The 1964 classic that starred Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. They haven't said who will be playing Cleopatra, although Angelina Jolie is being
That seems perfect.
Rumored. I think so, too. But the screenwriter for this, his name is David Sharpa, says he wants to make it a Game of Thrones-like makeover of this movie.
Oh, yes.
It'll be bloody and extremely violent. And
still Angelina Jolie.
Lean, mean, political thriller is what he said. Full of assassinations. So this is going to be a very, very different take on Cleopatra. For those of you who remember the original version from back in the day.
Well, they should have Brad Pitt in it, too. That way you'd have the whole Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah, then they'd get back together, maybe, like him, and like Richard Burton and her did.
Oh, come on. All right, what's the Coachella lineup?
The Coachella lineup is going to feature Beyonce headlining this year. She had a drop out last year because a little small thing. She was pregnant with twins.
Bay.
Eminem is headlining this year. The Weeknd is headlining this year.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Steve, I know because you are Chicago's number one rap fan, Tyler, the Creator.
Sure. Yeah.
Vince Staples.
Is Timmy the Destroyer involved?
We have Max the Proctologist. I don't know if that's... I'm not really familiar with his music, but...
I know his first move.
I hear he throws down, if you'll excuse the expression.
Coachella is where?
Coachella is in Indio, California.
Yeah, out in the desert.
It's going to be April 13th and 20th.
It's BYOW, bring your own weed.
David Byrne from Talking Heads is going to perform.
Oh, okay.
And Chic with Nile Rodgers is going to perform, along with SZA and War on Drugs.
Mm. SZA, S-Z-A?
S-Z-A, that's correct.
Yeah, what did you originally think it was? It was S-Z-A.
I thought it was ZA. I thought you just said S-Z-A because that's not a word. And then one of our young producers here came up to me and said, Dean, that's SZA. The correct way to say that is SZA.
And they probably did whisper it.
In his mind, I could see the thought bubble above his head saying, old man, grandpa, SZA.
What's going on in the Kim and Kanye house?
They had a little bit of a scare. Their two-year-old son, Saint West, was taken to the hospital the other day, in the hospital for 2 days, as a matter of fact, with pneumonia.
Is he going to be okay?
He's already released.
Okay, good.
He's already back home, and he's asked to be back in the hospital and away from his parents.
Right, because that's the only way to stay sane.
He faked the whole pneumonia thing just to get away from them.
He's blinking out, help me, and he's only two. And finally, our long national nightmare is over. Paris Hilton is engaged.
Isn't that nice? I'd forgotten about Paris Hilton.
Right.
One of our original reality show pioneers. She was engaged over the holiday weekend. And the what everyone's talking about, she posted a picture of her and her fiancé. And she is very prominently featuring her hand with the ring, which is a 22-carat diamond ring, $2 million worth of ring.
22 carats. It's as big as my head.
That is a giant. And Steve's head is no laughing matter, as we all know.
I don't care for it.
You don't care for the ring? Let's go live to Jewelers Row, where Sandberg is standing by.
Yeah, it's not very feminine looking. It kind of...
Well, 22 carats.
It's unattractive.
Does it look like a Super Bowl ring?
It's a pair.
It's big.
Yeah, and she ripped it out of the box and shoved it on her own finger, which I thought was bizarre. It was like not a real like romantic. It seemed like she was staged it or something.
Who's the groom?
He's an actor.
Let me see here.
Chris Zilka.
Yeah, Chris Zilka.
And you know, Mike Jacobson is
Chris Zilka get $2 million?
Well, Mike just got engaged, you know, Dean. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. Mike Jacobson got engaged last Friday.
Yeah.
And there's a photo gallery up at
WGN Radio. Woman.
Yeah.
Did he get a 22-carat diamond ring for his fiance?
He did not, but he got a big rock.
Yeah, he got a really pretty ring. Yeah. And like Audrey's...
21, Dean.
21 carats, yeah. Audrey's ring is way more pretty than this giant honking thing on Paris Hilton's hand, so...
That's Sandberg live from Jewelers Row on our regular jewelry report. All right, go see Dean's top 10 worst list. Now, you're gone for the rest of the week, huh?
I'm going to be in California and unsure of my schedule when I'm out there, my interview schedule. So,
Meaning you'll want to sleep late and not get up for the segment?
Meaning I'm going to get room service instead.
I thought that might be the case. And who could blame you?
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Safe trip.
Bye.
All right, see you later. Back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's your thing. Do what you want to do. I can't tell you.
8:42. Anybody get a new phone for Christmas?
Do what you
I got a new phone about a week before Christmas.
Yeah, I got a new one in, I don't know, October, I guess.
Yeah. My daughter got one before Christmas.
Turns out we're all charging our phone wrong.
How so?
Well, let me go to the story here to get you the specifics and the details. If you charge to 100% or you charge overnight, you're training your battery the wrong way. You can shorten the usable life of the battery. The best way to extend the battery life, it's a prime topic, comes up all the time. And you guys are all iPhone types.
Yeah.
Is everybody happy with their battery life?
No.
Until I upgraded.
Which iPhone do you have?
I have the, it's the iPhone 2.
Is that the hand crank?
It's a hand crank, gasoline
powered?
Yeah. I have the 6, but when I updated it, the battery has just completely gone south.
See, mine was depleted too. I had the 6 and I got the 8 and now I'm fine. Now I can go a full day before I lose charge.
I can go a full hour.
Yeah, my husband's depleted too, and he upgraded, and it's one day.
You got to get the 8.
I always thought the worst thing you can do is plug it in and unplug it, because I thought you're training your battery then to expect to be charged all day long, all the time. Mm-hmm. Turns out that's the best thing you can do. Battery University, the people that study this stuff all day. Is that like Trump University?
No.
Battery University said the best way to charge your phone is a little at a time whenever you have a chance.
Oh.
So just plug it in wherever you are. Even if it's just for a few minutes, you'll be fine. Partial charges cause no harm.
See, it's like snacking. It's like snacking for your phone. Just little charges.
Cranking up the metabolism of your phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't fully discharge your phone before plugging it in, because that used to be a thing. Let it drain at least once a week to zero.
Right.
Now they're saying that's bad. Battery University says, by the way, is Battery University's football team any good? They're not in the Final Four, I know.
I'm not sure.
Are Flying Horned Frogs of Battery University?
They're charged up.
The Anodes.
The Chargers. The Battery University
Chargers. Yeah.
Okay. Battery University says it's so-called deep discharges, which happen when you use your phone, only a small portion of its battery life is left, wear down the batteries if you let it go completely empty. Samsung has echoed that advice in one of their own blogs. Said, try to keep your battery's charge level between 65 and 75%. That's the best way to go.
Does it say anything about how often you should shut your phone off?
Not yet.
Okay.
According to Battery University, the lithium-ion batteries inside your smartphones have longest lifespan between 65 and 75. And if it's impractical to always have your charge between those levels, you at least know what is, in fact, ideal. If you can't do that, they say shoot for between 45 and 75.
Because recently I'd heard 80%, 40 to 80 is the number. I mean, those are pretty close, but 45 to 75 is the number, according to Battery University. If you typically keep your phones charged between 25 and 75, you likely won't cause too much long-term damage. But check this out. Never fully charge your battery.
Really?
I do it every night.
So do
Me
I.
Too. Me too.
Charge it overnight every night.
Plug it in.
Charging your phone's battery from a low of 25% to 100% will reduce its capacity significantly.
No.
Last night, I had 17-18%. Put that baby in the wireless charger. Got up this morning, and it was all charged up. Good to go. Well, it turns out I'm an idiot.
I am too, apparently.
Charging from pretty much any amount to 100% is a bad idea. Lithium-ion batteries do never need to be fully charged. It's not desirable to do so. It's better not to fully charge because a high voltage stresses the battery and wears it out in the long term. And the worst thing, of all the bad things you can do, is do the trickle charge. Do you have that indicator on your phone where you get to 100% and they said 7-8 minutes left to trickle charge your phone?
No.
No.
Gives you a full 100%? Well, we have that in the Android world.
Ah, that's what that is.
And unplug your phone immediately if it ever reaches 100%. Immediately.
Okay. I never knew that.
So let's go over the myths. The All myths right. as we've known them. Charge your phone overnight? Bad idea. Mm-hmm. Let your phone go to zero occasionally? Bad idea.
Yeah. And don't let it go to 100%.
Don't let it go to 100%. Charge it wherever you are. So I remember every time, I used to do this all the time. And this is when I was told not to do it. Every time you get in the car, pop the charger on. And the key is to, if you can, keep it between 65 and 75. But 45 to 75 is the ideal number, not 40 to 80.
And now you know.
You think they have dorms at Battery University?
They do. They do. Yeah, they absolutely do.
So when it hits 100, why don't they put a little alarm in the phone so it gives you an alarm to unplug it right away?
Well, that's the other thing. I've never understood why batteries don't automatically shut off at 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
They got to have the technology to do that, right?
Give you an alert or something.
Because how many times have you plugged a battery in, even if it's not your phone, for anything you charge, and then you forget it's plugged in?
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah, me too. Especially overnight, then you'd wake up again, though.
I wear a Fitbit Ionic. Uh-huh. It's good. You only have to charge about once every 5 days. Mm-hmm. But because I only charge it once every 5 days, I put it on the charger, and I forget it's on the charger.
I have a question. You said you have a wireless charger.
Yeah.
So is that like built into your nightstand, or how does that work?
Just plug it in the wall. It's a disc.
Okay.
And you lay the phone on the disc.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
And they sell those charging pads and those charging cases now where you can, you know, morphine? Is it the morphine cases?
Those are not allowed at Battery University. Right. They have a zero tolerance policy.
But how about that? Who knew? Mary, this is information you need. 45 to 75%. Okay. 65 to 75% ideal. I'm looking at my phone right now. It's at 79%. I can't wait till it gets to 75. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. Big party there.
But you're not supposed to plug it in then.
No.
No.
No, keep it between 65 and 75.
Yeah, so lower it a little more, and then once in a while.
No matter what I'm doing, I'm going to watch my phone. As soon as it hits 64%, I'm plugging it back in.
It's too many rules.
You live life on the edge,
I really
you?
Do. These are the big concerns.
Crazy.
It is 8:49, and Mary's back from her break. Hope you had a nice holiday break, by the way.
I did. Very crazy.
See the grandbaby?
I saw her a lot. Good. Yeah. It was so
Getting
cute.
Getting more fun every day, huh?
Oh, exactly.
On a morning after, big story, the New York Times op-ed story about the fusion GPS confusion and what actually started the whole Russian investigation. We still tend to get caught up in the little things. Now, granted, $45 million for the president to go golfing in 1 year seems expensive, but I tell you, have you seen green fees lately? They can be pretty tough.
Right.
So I don't ever get caught up in the Trump golfs too much. You might say, well, you're a golfer. Listen, you're always got to be on call. When he says, hey, I'm working, and he's on the golf course, no, you're not. You know, you can have a conversation on the golf course, but the pace of the game is such that you're not going to solve big problems.
No.
You can break down walls. You can do things like that. But anyway, the point is, the media sometimes goes a little nuts over stuff they don't have to go nuts over because, as our friend Pat Brady has said many times, if everything's outrageous,
Nothing's outrageous. Mm-hmm. But here's a little bit from the yesterday's press briefing, the golf discussion with Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
In less than a year in office now, President Trump has visited golf courses 91 times. There's confirmation that he's played the game of golf at least 75 times. Sean, back in March, told me that this was different than President Obama's use of golf, which was Obama played far less than President Trump, but Sean said Trump was using the game much differently. Can you tell me the biggest single thing the president has accomplished for the American people during his time on the golf course?
I think it would certainly be developing deeper and better relationships with members of Congress, in which those relationships have helped push forward the president's agenda, specifically when it comes to helping get the tax reform and tax cuts passed. A lot of that, I think, and the success of that came from the strong relationships that the president has, and he's played golf with a number of senators and used that time certainly to accomplish that.
Why does it seem as though the White House has some kind of issue about his time on the course?
I think it's the press that has an issue with his time on the course. I'm sorry?
Is there a reason for no readout or confirmation when he's having these meetings on the course?
We provide information when it's pertinent to the day, and we'll continue to do that.
The problem with not having a readout from the golf course is a readout would be clunk. Crap! I can't believe I shanked that. Or, and what has he accomplished on the golf course? He's hitting his wedges better. You know, let it go.
And from a news standpoint, I mean, the reason we talk about this is because he made an issue of it with Obama, saying Obama was always
right,
on the gas.
Right, but make the point, right. And I think the point's been made, that he's a hypocrite. I tweeted this out yesterday. His tweets are not surprising. They're not shocking. They're just really disappointing. And the golf thing, let it go.
And it feels like we should stop watching his tweets, but I know we can't. It just...
Well, if that's going to be the major form of communication, I think you have to watch every one of them.
Yeah.
Right? All right, here's some other news that's out there. It turns out we have an update on our Jew.
Oh, the lawyer?
Yeah, Roy Moore's wife said, you know, we have a lawyer. We have lawyers. One of them is a Jew.
Fake news would tell you that we don't care for Jews. I tell you all this because I've seen it all, so I just want to set the record straight while they're here. One of our attorneys is a Jew.
It's just still ridiculous. It's weeks later.
Boy, good thing she clarified that.
One of our attorneys is a Jew.
One of our attorneys is a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who has a friend who's a black man.
Oh, my God.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
At what point do you think she realized what she was saying?
I met a person who knew a Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
It's what now?
At what point did she realize what she was saying? Oh, wait.
No.
Never.
No. In case you missed the Roy Moore updates in the past few days, Roy Moore has been basically shunned by everyone in Alabama. Doug Jones was certified, and our favorite Jewish attorney voted for Doug Jones, not for Roy Moore.
One of our attorneys is a Jew.
And a traitor. I think that's clear.
What happened to the horse? Do we know what happened to the horse? What was her name? Fussy or Friendly? Or?
Oh, the horse that he rode in on?
Yeah, the horse he rode in on.
Yeah, we don't know. Fussy. I certainly hope the horse was able to escape, because that horse as well looked like it was blinking out, help me. A couple other things in the news we haven't had time to cover anywhere else. Gretchen Carlson has been named the new chair of the Miss America pageant. The former Miss America winner seems like the right person, because one of the reasons the current chair was kicked out was a sexist email scandal, in which part of the emails was he was mocking the appearance of some of the girls.
That's nice.
It's not really what you hope for, but Gretchen Carlson should be the right person for that job, right?
I think so.
John Dean says Richard Nixon may have gotten away with it if there was a Fox News in 1972 to 74. That's obviously a concerning statement, but it remains to be true.
What does that mean for the current state of affairs, I wonder?
Yeah, well, that's the point, right? If Sean Hannity and their Fox and Freaks morning show continues to behave the way they do. We've talked about the button and the size of your button. That'll come up again, I'm sure, before the show is over. The first blue moon in 150 years is going to happen at the end of the month. Let's go live to Steve in outer space. Steve, do you have any take on this blue moon?
It is blue, Steve. I can confirm it is blue.
All right.
But that's about it. You know, I have to tell you how bright the one we just had was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it
actually created shadows in the middle of the night. I got up and I thought I'd left lights on in the back of my house. But the blue moon will be blue. That's all I can say at this point.
A blue moon in this case, according to the story, has nothing to do with its color and everything to do with timing. There's normally 12 full moons a year. The 13th, a blue moon, shows up an average of every 2 to 3 years. The combination of a blue moon and an eclipse is unbelievably rare. Last one was in 1866. Let's go to the footage. Oh, wait, it was 1866.
No, yeah. Wait. Yeah. Oh, no, Dave wouldn't have footage of that.
No, Dave covered it on his scrolls. Mm.
Now, is there a history there? I know you asked me about the blue moon, but I know because we have the harvest moon, that was because it was at harvest. We don't know the origin of the blue here, right?
I think Chubby Checker was around, and there was a Blueberry Hill song that was...
That's where
or blue cheese
thrill.
On the moon wasn't the...
I got nothing.
Yeah.
And then finally this, Tanya Harding says, I knew something was up before the Nancy Kerrigan attack.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo! Woo!
Ow! Love that money!
A lot of places still looking backwards. Let's look forward. You got any predictions for your money for 2018? You got any? You have less? You might have less if you paid your property taxes. You know, we got to look into, too, before we get to Elise Glink here. Where'd the money that we pay the property taxes go?
That's a great question.
What are the counties doing with the money right now, this influx of cash at the end of the year?
Like in a fund or something? Because it's got to be be going somewhere before it actually pays out what they owe.
Dave, your check hasn't even been cashed yet, right?
They had to have the money before the end of the year. Well, I guess I had to pay it before the end of the year, really.
Right.
But no, my check hasn't been cashed.
So the idea being, why are they holding it? Why aren't they investing it? What are they doing with it right away?
Well, maybe it just takes too long to go through all those checks they've got.
Mm. It just seems like there'd be somebody named Timmy.
There we go.
You're in Lake County, aren't you?
Timmy.
Yes, I am.
Somebody named Timmy in Lake County who could run to the bank. Yeah. Hey, we got in its check.
Right.
Let's go to the bank.
Yeah. Better cash it. Hurry.
I actually overnighted my check as opposed to going to stand in line to drop it off because I was concerned it wouldn't get there by regular mail.
I did the same thing. Yeah. I sent it certified.
Yeah. So, but I haven't checked to see if it's cleared. I should do that. I don't know what I'll do about it when I find out one way or the other.
Okay, so now I know.
But at least I'll know. Elise Glink joins us now. Did you pay your property taxes early?
Of course we did.
Yes, and is your check cleared? Has it been cashed?
I paid them by electronic debit. So, yes, I think they are it cleared.
I didn't even know that was an option. You could do it by debit?
I think not a debit card. I think we just used our...
wired money?
Set up where you can transfer. You wire it in.
Sure, you and your fancy money tricks, your money voodoo.
Of course. Wait, that's right. Well, how am I... I've got to test all this out or else I can't share it with you.
Did you have a nice holiday?
I did. It was lovely. Lots of sun and warmth, unlike here. I tried to bottle it up and bring it back, but, you know, it kind of dissipated at the border.
Yeah, where were you? South America?
We were. We were in the in Argentina and Chile, the Atacama Desert of Chile.
What a nice trip.
Super nice.
Why is it called the Atacama Desert? What is it? I don't know it. I don't know that part of the world.
It is the driest desert in the world, and it's the highest desert. It's at about 9,000 feet. So you start at about 9,000 feet, takes a few days to catch your breath, and then you go up from there.
What, is it spectacularly beautiful, or are you just trying to lose a family member? Why go there?
It looks a little like Mars, and now I never have to go to Mars.
Did you hear, by the way, that the temperature, the wind chill yesterday in Chicago, we've got to look this up. This can't be right. But I was told, and it was reported in multiple sources, the wind chill yesterday in Chicago was lower than the surface temperature on Mars.
I bet that's correct.
Does not surprise me.
That's how ridiculously cold it's been. All right, back to this property tax thing for a second. You paid yours in advance. We don't know if they're still going to. Here's my opinion. If you paid your property taxes in advance, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people around the country, if not millions. I don't know what the actual number is, who paid their property taxes early. And because the IRS said, well, they're not going to count unless they were levied before, and you could show that they were levied before New Year's, it just doesn't make sense that they would be able to shut that all down. Congress set this up. Congress made everybody jump. And if everybody jumped, the IRS doesn't now get to say, yeah, those don't count. Am I nuts?
No, you're not nuts. It's very interesting, Steve, but I think we should all take heart that the IRS has sort of been gutted in terms of numbers of people to follow up on things like this. And so while there's lots of warnings out there about how this won't work and that won't work, the truth is I think there's going to be very little enforcement. So onward.
Well, you know, the rest of that is, I was picking something up. You stopped talking. I was bending over to pick something up. But the rest of that story is, to me anyway, that if there is some sort of IRS blockade of this, that you're going to be ending up in court immediately. It'd be immediate court action. Because otherwise, why would people give up thousands of dollars at the end of the year they weren't planning on giving up?
Yeah, I do think there's going to be some court cases around this. And I'm not actually worried about how this is going to play out, because I think the rules haven't really been written on tax reform yet. I think there are so many holes in this legislation, and that's what happens when you rush something through of this magnitude without any hearings and nobody weighs in on all the little unintended consequences, and you know there's going to be tons of unintended consequences. The media hasn't even had a chance to pick it up yet. I haven't even heard back yet from the National Association of Enrolled Agents, who are former IRS agents licensed to represent taxpayers, and they usually send out a really good summary of what's going on. They even haven't had time to parse through it yet. So this is just the opening salvo, and I think there's just going to be more to come. And I don't think people should stress about this. If you know, in the state of Illinois, you were assessed before the end of the year, and if you paid it, you should be fine.
The predictions for 2018. Are you ready to give me these?
Well, I'll tell you what I think might happen with the stock market, because we've had a year that I hate to credit Donald Trump with anything, but it is an unusual year unlike any other. And in that respect, it's unlike any other because we didn't have a single contraction of more than, it was like 2.8%. And that is the shallowest drop for any calendar year, according to Bloomberg. And we didn't even register a monthly loss when you include dividends in any month this year. And that's the first time that's happened. So 2017 was a very good year to own stocks. And I think 2018 is going to be a little different.
Now, the Trump bump, as it's called, seems to be a continuation of a trend that started after the economy recovered after 2008. That doesn't mean Trump shouldn't get credit, but it also doesn't mean he invented it.
Well, he didn't invent it, but most new presidents come in, and I don't have this number in front of me, but I saw it last week, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. Trump's bump has not actually been the biggest bump, despite, you know, the rhetoric, in the history of bumps. So many first presidents, it's in their first year, presidents come in and they get a bump in the stock market. Obama had a bigger one. Of course, he was starting at a much lower point.
Right.
We've seen other presidents over the years, and I think this year's stock market increase over 2017 was maybe the third, fourth, or fifth largest. Nothing to sneeze at. Everybody did great, but that just makes me think that we're going to revert to the mean next year, because numbers always do. And when we do that, that just means we're going to have some sort of a correction in the stock market, and I would expect something between 5% and 10% this year. And I don't necessarily think it'll last. I don't think it'll, you know, go down 50% unless, you know, there's some other things that happen around the world to really shake things up. But it's normal to have corrections, and people should expect them.
Okay, so with those corrections, Elise, and with the new tax bill, will it become, you think, a buyer's market or a seller's market for those looking to sell or buy in the next few months?
For real estate or stock?
For real estate.
So
real estate is kind of interesting. So first of all, every single housing market economist has predicted over the last 7 years that interest rates were going to go up. And if you listen to some of the economists, they were talking about hyperinflation back in 2011, 12, 13, 14. We kept hearing about inflation was going to be running away and we were plowing too much money into public works and things like that. And, of course, none of it happened. In fact, the Fed has raised their federal funds rate, I don't know, 1.5%, and actually the long-term rates have dropped. And so if you went out to get a mortgage today, it's still under 4%. You're looking at a 30-year rate at under 4%. And that's now, the 30-year rate is based on the 10-year rate, but regardless, long-term rates, however you frame it, have gone down. That's going to change this year. I think interest rates are going to go up. The problem is that housing prices have gone up a lot. Even here in Chicago, where we've really had kind of the lower end of how much housing prices have risen, we've still seen housing prices go up. And so the problem for a lot of first-time buyers out there, millennials who want to buy something, is that, number one, the deductions are all changing with tax reform. Number two, prices have been going up. And number three, interest rates will go up this year. They've started to climb a little bit, and we're going to see them go up a little bit higher, maybe 4.5%. And while that doesn't sound like a lot, it's very psychological right now, that every little point makes you feel like you can't afford it. So I do think that we're going to see home sales kind of flatten out. We're already seeing that in other places around the country. And if you're selling, sell fast.
Is that the guidance? You know, because people normally don't sell this time of year. They wait till spring.
Right. Well, in the real estate world, spring begins on January 2nd. That was yesterday.
Oh, well, happy spring.
I know it doesn't feel like spring. Happy spring. It's a mental thing.
All right. So if you're planning on moving ahead with it, you should move ahead with it, but you shouldn't wait.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely pent-up demand for certain kinds of housing in certain neighborhoods. And so if you are happen to be the kind of homeowner who wants to sell, maybe you're moving somewhere else, and you feel like, you know, you're wondering whether you should go now or wait until March, I would say that over the next month and a half, it would be an excellent time to list your house. I do think there's this pent-up demand, and people will be buying.
Did you ever sell your place?
I'm thinking about it.
You've been thinking about it as long as you've been thinking about buying a new mattress.
I know, exactly. Takes me a while. But with advice from my friends like Elise, they'll move me along. And you.
You should consider renting, because clearly you like owning it, but you don't want to live there anymore. So renting is kind of a happy medium.
Why don't you just move all your stuff to the hallway and rent the apartment?
Well, then I'll buy a mattress.
Yeah,
and I can sleep on the mattress.
Get a blow-up mattress. Then
right.
It's portable.
There you go.
Let's talk about the stock piece of this, buyers and sellers market for stocks. Doesn't it depend on the individual stock, or are we riding waves still?
So I would just say to you that I actually haven't been buying individual stocks for a long time. I only buy index mutual funds. And the reason I do that is that I think index mutual funds are the cheapest, best way to diversify a portfolio, and you really don't know. You know, if you chase returns, so let's say, oh, I want to be like the Winklevoss twins, right? And I want to buy Bitcoin. Who doesn't, right? They're billionaires now.
Right.
And they look alike. They can share clothes. It's
right,
all around.
Right.
The problem with chasing something like a cryptocurrency, and that's been a really hot thing, is that by any definition, cryptocurrencies, all of them, but particularly Bitcoin, are in some sort of an insane bubble right now. There's just no way to justify thousands percent of an increase over like a 2 month period and say that that's a normal way that stocks move. They just don't, and assets don't move that way. And so it's clear that that's definitely on the bubble track. And I think the other ones are too. And so I would expect that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and the blockchain, which reminds me of the Facebook, are probably in for a bit of a wake-up call this year.
Do you own any Bitcoin or anything like that?
I don't, because I it doesn't feel real to me.
Right.
I'm a little like Warren Buffett when, you know, maybe I'll miss out because Warren Buffett didn't really invest in technology, maybe ever. But I just don't like the idea that, and I understand now they're going to trade futures on it and it's getting more real, but it's still not recognized by any government around the world. It's still used in the black market extensively to avoid, you know, regulation, and that just doesn't feel to me like a real currency yet.
Well, I'll tell you what an idiot I am, speaking of missing out. I had an opportunity to get in. Remember the company Cellular One? One of the early mobile phone companies?
I used to have them.
Yeah. I had an opportunity to get in very early on Cellular One. And I don't think I said this specifically, but I think it came down to, who's going to use a phone in the car? Nobody's going to do that. Meanwhile, I've owned every phone since the giant Motorola brick. So not only am I an idiot, I've also paid handsomely for it. All right, so if cryptocurrency is not your thing and you invest in these index funds, that seems to be a safe way to go. The 529 plans, the college investing funds, even if you missed out on getting one before the end of the year, that's a solid way to go, right?
Yeah, I like 529 college savings plans, which in the new tax reform is now also any sort of private school savings plan. And you can use it for, I think you can use it for secular schools or religious schools, and you can use it for high school and grade school. So if you've got a kid who's going to Catholic grade school, you'll be able to use a 529 for that. I'm just going to warn everybody that there are limits to how much you can contribute. And so if you use up all your money sending your kids to Catholic school, when it comes time for college, there won't be anything left. But small point.
Are they income related or just there's a just a flat number that you can kick in?
It's generally a flat number that you can kick in. But here's again where I think we need to understand what the rule, how the rules are going to change. So I'm not actually sure if in the new tax reform bill, because I haven't been able to find this part yet, that the 529s are going to eliminate all of the limits. Right now, there's a certain amount that you can put in every year. I think it's up to maybe 10,000, or you can put in 50,000 or something like that, 50, 55, maybe it's even 60 now, 60,000 and 12,000 a year. You can put it in all at once, but then you can't contribute any more in a given year. Not a lot of people I know have $60,000 in cash to do this, right. But some grandparents do, and they contribute on behalf of their grandchildren. And it's a nice way to pass down assets from generation to generation, and then they grow tax-free until you use them for college. And they do have to be used for college, now grade school and high school, and there's some rules around what expenses you can pay with it.
I like to launder my money through Abigail Grace. You know, she's two now, so I'll put $1 million in Krona. Is it Krona? I think that's it. Into, say, Puffs, those little chewable things of air that little babies and kids like. You know, then it comes back to me.
Just go with the Bitcoin because it's so much safer.
Mm. You think Abigail Grace laundering money is not a good idea? Probably not. Another prediction?
You're ahead of the curve, as always.
Yeah.
Do you have one more prediction for 2018?
Sure. let's see.
Well, it's okay if you don't.
Yeah, I don't have anything.
Okay, all right. It was nice of you to reach, though. If you want to, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off by the new tax reform bill. That would be my guidance for the year.
God, I think she's talking to. It sounds like she's talking to her sons, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, come on. Elise Glink, thinkglink.com. Going to sell your house? Sell it now, right now. Thank you, Elise.
You're welcome. See you soon.
Have a great day. She's in a desert in Argentina.
Right. It's cool. It sounds like a cool trip, though.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
To me, it does.
You say
yeah.
So. It's 9:26. More in a moment on 720 WGN. What you just heard, sponsored by Grandview Homes.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo-hoo!
9:41, and thanks to you, Big O, for your contribution to New Year's Eve as well. Oh, do we have O?
Thank you very much.
There you
it's
are.
It's a pleasure to join you weekly here for a brief chat, and a Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Hope things are well there. Oh, by the way, I was thinking of you the other day. I was going through some show prep, and there's a magazine, online magazine I hadn't seen called Share. They did a Agricultural Challenges in 2018 feature, and I'm looking through it to see if there's some things to bring up to you. And one kind of jumped out. It said, for every 100 calories of food grown, people only eat about 35 calories, which leads to a 65% waste. And the United States is one of the biggest culprits in agricultural and food waste. We throw out an awful lot of food.
Now, yeah, we do.
And I've seen various percentages of the food that is thrown away, and they're all pretty high when you consider the fact that millions, and in some case billions of people go hungry every day on the planet. The problem is a matter of distribution, not so much production. We can produce it, but then getting it to the people who need it becomes a challenge because of transportation, because of politics. A lot of developing countries, the leaders of those countries retain their power by saying, okay, if you support me, you get food, but if you don't support me, you don't get food. So it's not just the fact that we don't have enough food, it's more the fact that we can't get it where it should be.
The also this particular story I was talking about as well also talks about sell-by dates, and these arbitrary sell-by dates that are on food aren't necessarily things that you specifically have to adhere to, and folks will throw those things out when they are still good for, depending on the particular food, maybe a week more, maybe a few days more, maybe longer.
And the other thing that I can't fully figure out is what happens to all of the food at the Sunday brunches at restaurants and hotels that don't get eaten but then can't be served? I think some restaurants and some hotels have found ways to distribute that food, but it's a dangerous thing for them because food poisoning could occur. Probably wouldn't, but it could, and you know that then lawsuits would follow. So that, yes, I understand why that's a challenge, and a lot of food gets thrown away because it's put out there on display, and once that's happened to it, you can't sell it.
There are laws in Chicago now that prevent, unfortunately, restaurants from giving the leftover food, you know, at the end of the day, or bakeries with the bread to local food pantries and food banks. Right. Yeah, they can't do
but
that.
But there had to be, you know, I don't want to make it this simple, but there had to be one case with one lawyer or one law firm that created this change in the law, because the greater good that would be done by repurposing all of that leftover food far outweighs the risk of somebody getting food poisoning.
It is a very big concern in the food industry because everybody is ready to file a lawsuit if something happens.
9 billion mouths to feed by 2050.
Yep.
That's 32 years away. We're going to have to feed 9 billion people. Do we have enough land to grow that much food?
Well, we do, thanks to technology. You know, the criticism of genetically modified GMOs and MOs and all that sort of thing that's been hampering the investment in new technology. But it's got to happen because, no, we don't have any more new farmland. And the farmland that is not being farmed now probably isn't for a good reason. It's fragile land. It's easily susceptible to wind erosion, to water erosion. And so you don't want to go in and plow that land because a lot of it will wash away or blow away. But with technology, you know, I talk about when I was a kid on the Wisconsin dairy farm, we got 60 bushels of corn to the acre, and that was a good crop. Today, farmers are getting 300, 350 bushels to the acre, and that's all because of technology.
Hey, Orion, in the summertime, we all support the farmers markets by buying vegetables and locally right. grown produce there. But what do we do in the wintertime? How do we support the local farmers if we're buying frozen vegetables or canned vegetables?
Well, I tell you, in Huntley, Illinois, where I live, they have a winter farmers market. They take it indoors. Of course, you're not going to get the fresh lettuce, you're not going to get the fresh tomatoes and all of that produced locally, but there are communities that take the farm market business inside. Not many, but we're seeing more of them happen that way. And the way we transport now, for example, here in Arizona, and I mentioned this before, in Yuma, Arizona, that's on the border of Mexico and the United States, every morning 15,000 to 20,000 workers from Mexico come across the border to harvest the lettuce crop because this time of the year, the Imperial Valley on the border of Arizona and California
is the lettuce capital of the country. 90% of the lettuce consumed in the wintertime comes from the Imperial Valley. But when that lettuce crop gets ripe, you've got about 2 days to get it harvested and cooled and in rail cars or trucks to cities all across the country. And that's why, as several farmers here in Arizona have told me, it's not an immigration law that's the problem. It's the labor problem, getting it into the field on time. And that does become a bigger challenge because we're producing more and we have to harvest it.
And all of this takes money, money for development, money to hire, money to pay those you do hire. What about the new tax law? What impact is that going to have on farmers?
It will have an impact, but I think it will be beneficial to most producers because they do have some special categories of tax breaks. Cooperatives could be affected, and most of those are farm cooperatives. They could be affected because the tax laws, I think, will impact them probably more than any other sector of the economy, particularly in agriculture. So I haven't found anybody yet that has studied word by word the new tax rules, but they are, and I'm sure they'll find new rules every day that they look at it. So, can I mention one thing about weather?
Yeah, of course.
Because the
snowing
weather
in downtown Chicago, by the way.
Yeah. Well, it's even cool in the desert, but nothing like what you're getting. But the challenge is, how would you like to milk cows in a cold barn on a morning like this? Or how would you like to go out and feed cattle in a cold morning like this? And the immediate concern now is that a lot of the winter wheat crop in the United States is not covered with snow. And snow can be an insulator in this kind of weather by keeping it warm underneath so that the wheat plants don't freeze. But a lot of the winter wheat has no snow cover right now. So I would say it'll be a week or two before we can get in there and find out. But there is major concern about cold weather damaging the wheat crop. And winter wheat, for those who aren't familiar with winter wheat, is the most heavily grown wheat here in the plain states of Kansas, Oklahoma. And winter wheat gets planted in the fall. It does not germinate over winter. But that way, the moment we get warmer weather in the spring, the seed is already in the ground and it germinates. And we're harvesting wheat generally by June in the southern part of the country. That's why it's called winter wheat. It's planted before winter comes in.
This is what you learn about things. You learn when you listen to this show. You learn when you listen to
Big Knew that.
Do you remember what frozen pork bellies are?
Yeah, they're a thing of the past, really, yeah. But I would say my first 30 years at WGN, the most often asked question, what are frozen pork bellies? Mm-hmm. Because at the Mercantile Exchange, we traded frozen pork belly futures. The reason for that is there was a time when in the summer, bacon, lettuce, and tomato time, the demand for bacon grew a great deal. In the wintertime, there wasn't that much of a demand for bacon, and so the pork belly is the bacon that you eat on your bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich or with your eggs, and so they would put it into the freezer and hold it until the demand for it in the bacon, lettuce, tomato season came back. Well, today we eat bacon the year round. The demand for bacon, you know, you'll find it in probably 75% of the menu items at restaurants. And so we don't have the time to freeze it and bring it out because it moves really from the processing plant into the marketplace and the supermarket. So no reason to trade frozen pork bellies anymore. But that's happened so much in our food industry. Take turkeys. You remember when the big seller in November, December was turkeys? Now it's
turkey meat the year round. So all of these changes, I guess, in consumer tastes are being met by producers, but you have to keep ahead of it.
I actually like bacon-wrapped bacon. I don't know if you guys have tried it, but it's very tasty.
Love bacon.
Yeah, bacon is really very good.
Yeah, it's really all you need. One last piece of good news, though, before you go. I know how you love the college studies. You're always a big proponent of the studies.
Oh, yes, right, yeah, that we pay for.
But this new research from the University College of Dublin says that this notion that the high cholesterol is mostly due to things like cheese is absolutely wrong. They say cheese might not be as bad for you as previously thought. Eating a lot of cheese did not necessarily lead to higher cholesterol. And higher cholesterol in almost all cases is a genetic-based problem more than a lifestyle problem, other than extreme cases. And we have to stop blaming cheese.
Yes. And remember when we condemned eggs? You can't eat all those eggs for breakfast because that'll harm your health. So just about every food I love at one time or another has been called dangerous. And as a matter of fact, one of the doctors at Mayo out here talked to me about, are you drinking a lot of orange juice? And I said, well, not a lot, but I have orange juice. Well, he said, don't drink orange juice in volume because that's not good for you. As a matter of fact, he used the word, that's poison. And then I looked at him and I said, so I'm going to go out and tell my growers of oranges and citrus that they're growing poison? Come on. And then he realized who he was talking to
right.
and what he had said. And he said, well, no, he said. But the orange itself is much better for you than the orange juice. So I guess just about anything will kill us.
Yeah,
if
but
not
here's,
old age.
I was going to say, here's the bulletin. It's going to happen someday.
Yeah. Sure is.
Yeah, everybody. All right, Big O, always thank you for the time. Thanks for the help. Enjoy the day.
You too.
There you Bye. Go. It's Orion Samuelson live from the desert. Not the Argentinian high desert.
No.
The desert in Arizona, where he said it's chilly.
Yeah, right. Which should be
okay.
like...
All right, whatever.
Yeah.
50-ish, maybe.
9:54. Bill and Wendy, coming up, 720 WGN.